Hello and welcome to the Australian Bitcoin Podcast. My name is Daniel Wilczynski. On today's show, we've got Pipelia, and we will be talking about nodes. So we've done a few episodes about nodes already, but it's a very important topic. Nodes are very important for Bitcoin. They're like the central nervous system. I think of them as the central nervous system or the backbone of a Bitcoin network. The Bitcoin network is just a collection of nodes. That's what Bitcoin is. So it's a very important topic. And we have somebody who knows a lot about nodes, Pipelia, with us today. Pipelia is involved in Run Citadel, which is an open source project that helps people run nodes. We'll find out more about it. We're talking with him on the show. So, Pipelia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you also. So, I mean, what do you think of my description, like, about nodes being the central nervous system of Bitcoin? Do you agree with that?
Yes. I think that's exactly... that's a good description because it's difficult to... I mean, the nodes really are the also maybe you can picture it like the circulatory system for Bitcoin. So yeah, without nodes, Bitcoin would be impossible. If there was only one big server, Bitcoin would have been dead by long time ago. What makes the network censorship resistant is in fact the fact that there are many distributed nodes. So yeah, I think for starting, if you like, I would like to recap on the importance of running your own Bitcoin node, because I feel like it's greatly underestimated by most Bitcoiners. Even seasoned Bitcoiners sometimes don't appreciate just how important it is. So in fact, I will argue that Bitcoin is not hard money unless you run your own node. So this is a very bold opinion, but I think it's true. So like the concept of hard money is often associated with the Austrian economist, and they rightly focus on Bitcoin scarcity and stock to flow and other important metrics. But so in a word, they focus on the hardness of money, but they often overlook a concept which I call dark money. So this concept has been pioneered by Giacomo Zucco, which is a Italian Bitcoiner OG that I admire. And so I think it's a good idea to go back in time to explore the concept of dark money through the example of gold. So like very briefly, gold was hard money, the hardest money, but gold failed. So why was that? Essentially, what happens is that new technologies like the telegraph made so that they allowed information to travel much faster than the speed at which transaction could be settled. And this had the effect of incentivizing the use of credit. So basically, at the time, was credit backed by gold. Was credit redeemable for gold? But it was only a matter of time because before gold was removed from the equation. So we went from gold to credit backed by gold. And this had the effect of centralizing gold in few physical locations. And this made gold a shitcoin, basically, because made gold easier to confiscate. And that's exactly what happens with the executive order 6102. Basically, there was Roosevelt that seized the gold from the US citizens. So the key point to understand is that credit backed by gold made gold easier to confiscate, which in turn made gold a shitcoin. In a perfect free market, the hardest money always wins. But that's because the perfect free market respects property rights. But when violence and compulsion, when you take those two things into the equation, then it appears clear that the hardness of money is not enough. So gold was hard, but gold failed. So money being dark means that it is resistant to censorship, coercion, and confiscation. So this property is a requirement for money to be hard, and vice versa. You cannot split the properties of hard money and dark money. They are two and the same. Hard money that is not dark creates the incentives for confiscation, just as in the case of gold. And dark money that is not hard will not be used except by those who are forced to use it. For example, in the case of Monero, this undermines the anonymity set of Monero. So not enough people are using it because it is not hard money, and therefore the only people that are using it are the ones that are forced to use it, that they need those kind of privacy, which limits the anonymity set.
Okay, so you're saying that to get Bitcoin becomes hard money, as for you, for somebody holding Bitcoin, it becomes hard money only when you're really running your own node. Because is that's what you're saying? Because you're saying because your property rights are strengthened with running a node, like your ownership,
yes,
of Bitcoin.
Yes, basically, yes. Like I picture it in this way. Like Bitcoin operates at different level of darkness, and those level depend on how the user use it. So like the first level is the level of private keys. If you secure your private keys and you keep them secret, and so you avoid using custodians and all of that thing, you build the informational asymmetry. Like all the computers in the world don't have enough computational power to break that encryption, to figure out what your keys are. In fact, in Bitcoin, we say not your keys, not your coins, that perfectly captures it. So this is the first level of darkness. The second level of darkness is making sure that the connection between your fiat identity and all of your public keys is secret. Otherwise, the low-hanging fruit is not breaking cryptography. The low-hanging fruit is coming to your house and beat you and force you to give the attacker your Bitcoins. So yeah, for example, KYC Bitcoins, I can see a future where they are no better than gold in a bank vault, which can be confiscated. It would be obviously a little bit more. It will be harder, but not so hard, because if you have a list of all the citizens that own Bitcoin, a nation state could say, you have to give me 40%, 50%, 80% capital tax, or you go to jail. That's entirely possible. Maybe that doesn't happen now, but it might happen in 5 years or 10 years. So yeah, you can lose your Bitcoins if you, just as in the case of gold, as money is not dark enough, it might also lose its hardness because people can take it from you.
Okay, people, but I always thought that the benefit of running a node is more to strengthen the network overall. But what for, like, as an individual, what are the actual benefits of running a node? Because even if you're not running a node, people still can confiscate your Bitcoins. If you, for example, just have a hardware wallet, a self-custodial Bitcoin wallet, but you're not running a node, people can confiscate your Bitcoin, even if you're not running a node. So for an individual, what are the actual benefits of running a node?
No, well, you said it correctly that if you hold your private keys, basically no one can break the cryptography behind that. So no one can steal your Bitcoin in cyberspace, right? But if they know, like every time you transact with Bitcoin, you are connected to a Bitcoin node. And if it is not your own, it's someone else's node. So this someone else's node, if you think in another adversarial context, other node might can see all of your activity, what you buy, where you buy, and do something like that. And that is especially true if your Bitcoins or your UTXO are linked to your identity. And there have been many attacks, physical attacks on Bitcoiners, because it was known that they held a lot of Bitcoin. So for those kind of scenarios, the low-hanging fruit is not trying to brute force your 24 words or whatever. The low-hanging fruit for an attacker is coming to your house and trying to force you with violence to give them your Bitcoin. So that's where running a node is important for the individual. It is also important for the network, as you pointed out, but it is important for the individual because it gives you enhanced level of privacy. And going back to the previous discussion, it improves the darkness of Bitcoin, and therefore this improves the in some ways improves the hardness of Bitcoin. Your Bitcoin is more difficult to confiscate if you are running a node instead of using someone else's node.
Okay, yeah, I understand. That makes sense now. So it's, yeah, you gain more privacy, and because of the privacy, you also gain some security. Okay, that makes sense.
Yes, so exactly.
At what point, like somebody, a new Bitcoiner, just getting to Bitcoin, let's say they just bought their first Bitcoin, at what point do you think they should run a node? Should every Bitcoiner, every person who owns Bitcoin run a node? And if so, at what point in the journey do you think they should be running a node?
Yeah, that's a nice question. I think the journey for most people, for most Bitcoiners, goes like this. You buy Bitcoin. That's the first thing. The second is you take self-custody. You use a signing device. You also make few more than one backup of your seed phrase. And the third level is actually going to run a node. And I think this is this is a super important third step in your Bitcoin journey. Does every Bitcoiner need to run a node? Well, in an ideal world, yes, but maybe that can scale a little bit in very small and trusted communities, like for example a family or a few friends. Like if they trust me, I will run a node for them, so they will connect to my node. And in that sort of small trusted scenario, that also makes a lot of sense, instead of using the wallet nodes or the exchanges node, you use a node from a person that you trust. So that's also pretty good, honestly. But it's a little bit perhaps disappointing, because I think in the Bitcoin community, it was fairly established. It is fairly established now that you should have a hardware wallet or signing device, whatever you want to call them. But that's obviously incredibly important. But I think the third step we should push more about the education, why running a node is important, because the statistics are saying that there are less than 20,000 nodes on the network, which is not a huge amount, because if there are 1 million Bitcoiners, that would be 0.2%. So pretty small number of Bitcoiners actually do run a node. Yeah, and also, as you pointed out earlier, running a node is also important for the network, because we always hear that Bitcoin is secured by proof of work, and that is true, but also it's only half of the story, because no matter how much proof of work is behind a certain block, if it doesn't meet your rules, the rules that are in your node will reject it. So it is your ability to decide that aligns the incentives and keeps the network honest. And this is exactly what happened during the block size wars. So there was something called the user-activated soft fork, which was a way that the users told all of the parties in the New York agreement, all of the big companies, all of the big miners who had something like 80% of the hashing power, they told them, no, we are going to get SegWit, and you will do what we say, because we are the nodes. We run actually Bitcoin, and we will make sure that no one tries to corrupt it or change it in a way that we don't see fit.
Yeah. Just on that running a node and the securing it, it might be like common practice within our communities. If we go to like Bitcoin meetups and go to Bitcoin events, like everybody understands we need to run, have like a hardware wallet and self-custody. But like, because running an exchange, I come in contact with a lot of people who are just kind of getting into Bitcoin, and you'd be surprised how many people don't even like do that step of securing their Bitcoin properly. Yeah, we don't actually run a hard wallet. So even getting people to run, people who buy Bitcoin, getting them to actually secure it in a self-custody way and run a hardware wallet, sometimes I feel that's already a very big achievement, and a lot of people don't even get to that level.
Yeah, I think it's normal in a way, because Bitcoin is so new, and the experience also of using Bitcoin is strange. But I am very optimistic, because you know people are smart. I think, and I mean, if you are able to drive a car, you are super able to, you know, take self-custody and run a node, because that's like 100 times easier than driving a car, because driving a car is pretty challenging. You have to change gears, start the engine, stop the engine, brakes, accelerate. I mean, it's challenging, but everyone is able to do that after some training. And
yeah, I agree, because for a lot of people, like, you know, we got into Bitcoin kind of in our middle age, but for people, there will be people in the future and now who are just growing up with Bitcoin, and a lot of the stuff, okay, it seems complicated for us, and but it's only complicated because kind of we're learning it in middle age. Like for somebody growing up, it's going to become second nature and very simple and obvious. And you know, even like maybe in the future, we'll be looking at the kind of existing banking system, and or to get a bank account, you have to go in and do this and that, and we'll be looking at that, and that would be very complicated, and Bitcoin will seem so much simpler to them.
I think so. I know a couple of people who has more than 70 years that know how to use Bitcoin. Like there was this guy that is now printing with a 3D printer. He basically paid donate with us with Lightning, paid with Lightning. He was printing a 3D printed case, and then he told me, he asked me some question about Linux and how to do the setup, and then he told me like I am 78, and I was like, cool. Like I mean, yeah, I think we often underestimate the ability that people have to learn and adapt to new things.
Yeah. But just really quickly, because we kind of started talking already about why people should be running a node and what the benefits are. But just maybe really, really quickly, you could explain what actually is a node for somebody who doesn't know much. What is a Bitcoin node? How do you define
it? Sure. So a node is a piece of software that makes your computer, your device, connected to the Bitcoin network. So the network is made up of different nodes. And at the moment, there is only one, not only one, but it's basically the market share is basically mostly Bitcoin Core. So Bitcoin Core is the software that you can install on any computer, most computers, that does a few things. So first, it will connect to the network. Second, it will ask, hey, can you send me all the blocks that you know of? So it will ask multiple peers to send you the history, the old blocks. And then it will go through the process of validating all of them. So you go from to each and every block and see if they respect the rules that you have set up on your node. Among the all possible different chains, it will choose the one among the all possible chains that are consistent with the rules of the node, will choose the one with the highest proof of work. And so that's how that's how it is possible for thousands and thousands of computers distributed geographically to agree on a shared history of transaction. And once you arrived at the current block, you are synced. And so you can start use your node for sending transaction to the network, to use some block explorer to see the incoming payment that arrive at your Bitcoin address and so on. So it's the importance is that the nodes are the ones that validate the rules. The miners instead are the ones that provide the network with, I view it as a commodity. Like they provide a block with the proof of work. But if the block is invalid, your node and the node of others will reject it. So the validating part is made on the node itself, not on the miners. I think this is very confusing for many people, especially if they come from crypto or shitcoins, because I think they conflate the validation part with the proof of work itself, which is not really about validating the rules.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of people who don't have a deep understanding of Bitcoin make that mistake. They think Bitcoin is run and controlled by the miners, which is not true. It's partially true. There's some truth in it, but it's not true. The mine power is with people who run Bitcoin nodes, because they validate the network and they validate that everybody's else is doing everything correctly according to the rules of Bitcoin. So the nodes are the most important part, not the miners. And yeah, I would say, so Bitcoin Core is just like the implementation of a node. It's really their implementation. It's the implementation that Satoshi Nakamoto originally wrote, and it defines the rules of Bitcoin. Bitcoin Core defines the rules of Bitcoin, and anybody can install Bitcoin Core on their computer, and it's a piece of software, and they're basically running a Bitcoin node. And the difference is when you're running a deep Bitcoin node as opposed to other wallets that are not nodes, is that yeah, you're personally validating the network rules, as opposed to other wallets. If you just have a hardware wallet that's not connected to your own node, you're connecting to somebody else's node and you're trusting other people to validate those rules for you, which, I mean, that works, and that works for most people. But if you want to be really hardcore, you can have a node to validate the rules yourself. So that's kind of how I explain it. And so you're involved in a project, Run Citadel, which helps people run nodes. So maybe you can explain, what is Run Citadel, and yeah, how does it help people?
Yes. So as we said, one can definitely run a Bitcoin Core from scratch, but that takes some time and the willingness to tinker a little bit. So I'm sure your audience is somewhat familiar with the Ministry of Nodes, which I think are doing fantastic tutorials that explain how you can run a node from scratch. But, you know, it's not for everyone to learn how to use the command line and then following 2+ hours of tutorials just to get started. So we at Citadel is a free open source operating system that makes running a node and a server simple. And we will get to why the distinction node server in a second. So yeah, the value proposition is that we want to make node management simple for everyone, even people that are not technical, but they still want to participate in validating the rules of Bitcoin. So this is how, and an important distinction to make, that an important differentiator of Citadel is that it's free and open source software. So there are other OSs like similar to Citadel, but most of them are not free and open source. They are simply source verifiable, source viewable, depending on how you want to name them. And I think it's the difference is pretty big, because in both cases you can look at the source code, but the difference is that with source verifiable, there is a term of service that limits the user freedom. There are high exit costs, because you cannot fork it easily. You cannot use the code for commercial purposes. So, in a way, I see it antithetical to Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is about encoding laws into code, and instead here there is a term of service which is very difficult to read. It limits the user freedom. You cannot do certain things, like for example, Umbrel is source verifiable, and they do have a term of service that says something like, you cannot use this software for commercial purposes. But what does it mean? What is a commercial purpose and what is not? I mean, we are talking about Bitcoin. We're talking about money. Is a donation a commercial purpose? We are talking about Bitcoin and still we are treating it like if it was like a legal case or something, which I think is inappropriate. And there are also other benefits of being FOSS. So the user has the maximum amount of freedom, has low exit cost because you can fork whenever you want. There is a high incentives for companies to build on top because you can take open source code and you can use it without having any partnership of sort, without having those going through those kind of things. You can just take the thing, fork it, use it for whatever purpose. And it also has enhanced security because there is the public who scrutinize the code, who views the code, and much more than the source verifiable. Because why should a developer waste some time to view a certain code that he cannot use for his or her own project? Instead, if the operating system is FOSS, you do have the incentives to look at the code because you can reuse it to do something else.
Yeah. So because Run Citadel, the project you're involved in, so it's originally a fork of Umbrel. So I guess you forked it when it was fully free and open source, but now we've changed the policy. Is that correct?
Yes. I cannot. I asked Aaron because at the moment of the fork, I wasn't part of the project. So yes, this is what Aaron told me, that the fork happened at the time where Umbrel was still open source, like open source in the real way, free open source.
Yeah.
And then the two projects have moved in different direction.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but we still, we want to, yeah, you, we like and want to explain the why FOSS is important in general and also in this specific case, in the case of Bitcoin. And yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And so because you have to excuse my ignorance because I never, there's a lot of these kind of packages, Umbrel, Run Citadel now, and other kind of node boxes. Is that the correct term to use it? Like node box? Is that how you would term call these packages?
Yeah, we don't use the a specific term. Yeah,
no, you know, I always used when I like needed to run a node. I guess I'm a bit old school. I just run Bitcoin Core, so I always run Bitcoin Core to my needs. That's all I needed. So, but yeah, in the last few years, these kind of packages, I will call them node boxes, came out, and I personally don't have much experience with them, but I know some people really like them and a lot of people in Bitcoin like to run their Bitcoin node that way. But you can kind of explain it to me. Oh, so when you run Citadel, so is it like you basically, because there's some actual node boxes where you actually get the whole, like you buy it from the company, you get the whole basically computer, like the hardware installed on the software, the node software installed on hardware, and you get like the actual hardware physical box. But with Run Citadel, I guess you actually install it on your own hardware, on your own computer. Is that correct?
Yes, you can do both, actually. You can, there are options for you to just download the software and run it on every computer you have, spare hardware or new hardware, whatever. Many users buy Pi 4. And but yeah, there are also two startups. One is my startup, the startup I co-founded, which is called Nabi Technology. And the other is DTV Electronics, Don't Trust Verify Electronics. And we sell plug-and-play nodes. So yeah, we use this term more like plug-and-play nodes. And which means that yes, you buy a product, you buy a device, you will get the hardware, and there is Citadel already pre-installed, so you can just plug the Ethernet cable, plug the power adapter, and then you're good to go. You will immediately be able to see the dashboard and see that you are syncing with the Bitcoin blockchain.
Okay, right. So what about, because like with Bitcoin Core, you said about like, because you have to use the console, and that's one way to do it, but can't people just, because Bitcoin Core has a GUI component, can't people just run the GUI version of Bitcoin Core on their laptop?
Yes, for sure. I haven't done it in some time, but yeah, I think I think it's probably easier now than when I tried it the first time with the GUI. But with the Citadel, you will get even more than just Bitcoin Core, because yes, the first step is Bitcoin Core, but then maybe. You know, you want to run Lightning, so you can run LMD, C Lightning. You want to run an instance of mempool.space for other block explorers. You want to Lightning managers. So for Bitcoin Core only, I agree that is not particularly difficult. And yeah, there are also many tutorials you can do. But then there are other software that are particularly interesting for Bitcoiners, like, as I said, LND, C Lightning. Maybe you want to use also Join Market, which is very, very cool. So also those privacy preserving services, not services, application, sorry. Yeah, so that's the value proposition of Citadel, is that it comes with a well-stocked app store that contains a lot of Bitcoin apps, but it also contains a lot of non-Bitcoin apps. And we do have, of course, the user is always free to choose which one to run, which one not to run. But we, in some way, we see Bitcoin as a kind of a Trojan horse. So obviously, Bitcoin is a way to regain sovereignty in our lives, financial sovereignty specifically, and it is the most important way of this of our time. But it's not the only one, because you can become self-sovereign also when it comes to your data ownership, or you can become self-sovereign when it comes to your social graph or communications channels or social network. So I'm talking about applications like Nextcloud for hosting your own personal cloud, or a Matrix server to host this particular application, so you can have better privacy when it comes to your communication using the Matrix protocol, and even other application like running a Noster relay. So if some people are into Noster, it's a new social media. I'm not particularly into that, but it's a new social media protocol, which it's essentially, if you have Bitcoin Core running 24/7 on an hardware, it probably uses 3-5%, depending on what hardware you're using for. So you do have a lot more resources, and you can definitely run other application that help you regaining sovereignty, not just financial sovereignty, but also sovereignty in other areas of your digital life.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So it really helps. It has always other software packages, but really, I think for somebody really privacy, you know, sovereignty focused, it has always apps apart from Bitcoin, and that can help somebody with a privacy. Okay, that makes sense. And I think it also, I guess I would add another benefit of it is, over just running Bitcoin Core on your computer or laptop, is that if you do get that hardware box, the actual hardware with it, there is that benefit that you have the dedicated hardware tied to Bitcoin and that you need. And so you can just kind of plug it and run it 24/7 from your home.
Yes, because one doesn't have to run it 24/7, but you have to run it multiple hours a day. Otherwise, going back into a synced state becomes becomes slow. You don't want to you don't want to wait 15 minutes because you want to wait that your node become is again synced with the network, so you can transact. You probably want to do the transaction like on the fly without waiting.
Okay, yeah. So I'm interested a bit in your Bitcoin journey before Run Citadel. So maybe you could just share a little bit about that, what you done before this, and why did you become interested in Bitcoin and nodes?
Sure. So I actually started as many, like a friend of mine told me about the halving and said, oh, the price of Bitcoin is going to go up. And so I bought like $50, 50 euros. and then I watched the price. I thought I was a mastermind trader. obviously I wasn't. I was just stupid, just as everyone else. So then I went to the shitcoin casino. Lost some money there, and I actually started working as a researcher in a crypto project, Web3 project. And it was actually, it's funny because it was my first ever job, because I'm pretty young. So my first ever job was as a crypto researcher. This project wasn't that bad in the sense that we weren't like scamming people. But of course, the foundation of this protocol was completely broken, and this decentralized application, which was pretty much not decentralized, was built on top of Terra Luna, and then Terra Luna collapsed. So like I lost the job and then some money, and then I started reconsidering everything, and I was like studying many different coins to see which one would perform best, how you can create services on top of blockchain and all of that crap. And then I didn't see it coming, basically. So I was like, why? There must be something that I am completely missing. And so I reconsidered everything. And the click moment, I remember it, was when I read DergGG thread, Ledger, and the title is just incredible. The title is Ledger Requires Time and Times Requires Heat. So this is why
I haven't heard of it. Was this a thread? Was this like a Twitter thread?
Yes, a Twitter thread, but it was also an article published on his post. I think it's it must be dergg.com. He's Austrian German Bitcoiner. Yeah. And yeah, the title is Ledger Requires Time and Time Requires Heat. And I just find it super fascinating because I read some books before about physics and about the fact that many physical laws apply, many physical laws work regardless of the arrow of time, some like the gravitational force equal mass time acceleration, they work when time goes into the future work when the time goes into the past. So there is not an arrow of time necessarily that you can derive from the equation. The only equation that actually creates this arrow of time and says, no, the time goes only in one direction and not the other, is the fact that the entropy keeps on increasing. And so this the connection between Bitcoin, time, and heat, and the connection between heat and proof of work was super fascinating, and really was at that moment where I was all in on Bitcoin. And it was July 2022, so just 1 year ago, and a little bit more than a year ago. And so at the time I wanted to do something with Bitcoin. So the handle of the other co-founder of Nambi Technology is Het Permeteo. And so Prometheo and I started this journey trying to build this Bitcoin startup. And then we found out we wanted to create this product, which we do already, we have now. And we were thinking about which software we can use, and we wanted to use only free open source solution. And basically Citadel was, maybe it was the only one at the time, I don't remember. There might have been some others. Operating system that has a graphical interface that makes easier for people to run their own node. But yeah, essentially we chose to go with Citadel, and then I started working at Citadel as a contributor to this project.
Okay, I'll try and link that article from Gigi. Sounds interesting. I'll link it in the show notes. And so, like, what's kind of your journey? So I'm always interested, like, how people orange pill, like, how do you convince other people who now come to you, like, or who ask you, you know, there's some, you know, if somebody comes, oh, Pipelia, like, which shitcoin should I invest in? What should I do? Like, how do you respond to these people? Like, if somebody gives you advice of what to invest in and what Bitcoin, how do you help them understand Bitcoin?
Yeah, I am not super into orange pilling if the other person hasn't asked me, because I feel like it's total waste of time. It's like convincing, I don't know, Neanderthal man that, we will have something called the airplane. Like they it's so distant from most people. But if they ask me,
I agree.
If they ask me, which crypto, which shitcoin should I buy, or do you know about Bitcoin? I try to give them advice. I say, look, I've been into the crypto rabbit hole, and it is full of crap, and you shouldn't go there. You can totally skip that part and go directly to Bitcoin, because that's you will not lose 1 hour, 1 year, 2 years of your time and money into believing snake oil bullshit. So you can go directly to Bitcoin. And I also like to point out that with my friends when we go out, and that, you know, it's crystal clear that the quality of life is declining because of inflation. And we see the price of a beer that was 5 euros, now 6.5. So the price of everything measured in euros goes up. And so I say, well, so sometimes it's hard for me to not say anything, and I break my first rule of not engaging in orange pilling. But yeah, I say, look, this is not strange. This is by design. Money keeps constantly losing values, and that's by design. If you want the money that is resistant to that, well, that's called Bitcoin, and essentially solved one of the biggest problems that the world has.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, Pipelia, thank you for joining us on the podcast and explaining everything about Run Citadel and Noids. Is there anything else you'd like to, like, maybe we missed, but you'd like to mention?
One thing I would like to mention is that everything that we talk about concerns the present of Citadel, but we do have very ambitious plans. So in a couple of weeks, we will launch the long-term support, the Citadel 0.3 long-term support, which will fix all the known bugs, and it will make Citadel what it was supposed to be from the beginning. But then we will shift our efforts into creating very, very interesting things that we could talk about for hours. And so, yeah, if you, the call to action that I would like to make is that, you know, Citadel is a FOSS project, so we give everything free of charge and without any term of service that restricts your freedom. So if you want to try it out and let us know what you think, and if you think after trying it out that what we are doing is valuable, you can give value back in multiple ways. You can donate your time, your talent, and your money to keep Citadel going and improving over time. and donating your time. For example, you can do translations. You can help us translate the dashboard into different languages. You can also start contributing your talent. For example, we had new people that came to Citadel and started working and for improving the user experience and the user interface. So, yeah, I think there is room if you really first try it out, and second, if you think it is valuable, know that you can give value back in as I said, in time, talent, but also money. We accept both fiat and sats, and that would help us move forward for sure.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if you want to get involved, involved in Bitcoin, like projects like that are a great way to get involved, and everybody can contribute. And that's actually how we connected, because Jeremy, who used to work here with us at Hardblock, he's involved with Run Citadel, and that's how you and me connected.
Yes, exactly. I wanted to say his name because, but I wasn't sure that if I could say that you two guys know each other for privacy reasons. Or so
like he was on the podcast, so he used to
be
podcast here with us. So I think it's okay. Anyway, thanks for your time, Pipelia, and good luck with the work that you're doing. I will link all that stuff in the show notes, and see you around.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.